Welcome to the Strabane's Hall podcast series on successful succession planning. In today's episode, we're delighted to be joined by Shane Galway, who heads the EIS Investments team at Guinness Asset Management. And he's interviewed by our Senior Client Director, Chris Yardley. Both Shane and Chris will discuss EIS and BR schemes, explain exactly what they are, and how and why they could work as a piece of any client's wealth planning strategy. It's an interesting discussion into the pros and cons of these investments, and you'll hear why these are so successful. So without any further ado, let me hand you over to Chris and to Shane.
Hello, Shane, and welcome to the Strabane's Hall podcast. Thank you for joining me today. And as the introductions have already been done, we can dive straight into the questions. There are several buzzwords and acronyms which fly around the industry. Two of those are EIS and BPR, or more recently known as BR. So can you give us an overview of what these are?
Sure. Thank you, Chris, for having me on this. And starting with EIS. So EIS, or the Enterprise Investment Scheme, has been around for 26 years now. So it was introduced in 1994. And it's a series of tax breaks introduced to encourage investors into small growth companies. It's been a phenomenal British success story over that period. Some 30,000 businesses have received over 20 billion of EIS funds. And it really is, it's been the envy of other European countries because it's been such a driver of growth. So it's been greatly successful. Individuals can invest into companies directly, or they can come via a fund manager whose job it is to source and vet suitable companies for investment. And with regard to business relief is something that was introduced actually in the 1970s. The idea is that private companies and shares in private companies fall outside the estate for the purposes of inheritance tax. So an investment into an EIS qualifying company, by definition, qualifies for business relief. But lots of other assets also qualify for business relief. Other companies that don't necessarily meet the EIS criteria. But so there's a wider scope for business relief.
Okay, fantastic. And one of the first questions that we will get asked as an advisor is, what happens to the money? Where does the money go? So you can explain more about what the most common types of companies are that would be invested in.
Sure. Okay. In terms of sectors, the most popular is, and I'm talking about the market in general now, the most popular in terms of EIS qualifying companies is probably technology. And we at Guinness Asset Management see lots of software and deep tech businesses that are looking to raise money. There's also quite a well-developed life sciences sector, but EIS is definitely not restricted to those. And actually, in terms of our fund, we run the generalist fund, and we invest across about 10 sectors, and we see a wide range. So it encompasses technology, but also retail and manufacturing and education, leisure, food and drink is another one. So, you know, there's quite a lot of scope there. I think some of the parameters and restrictions of EIS, though, include, well, I suppose, first of all, location. A business has to have a UK base. It can have overseas operations, but the UK base is a requirement. Size is a factor. So remember, EIS is there to encourage investment into smaller businesses. And so there are some size restrictions. For example, a company has to have less than 15 million of assets when an investment's made. Another restriction is it has to have less than 250 employees. So a company can grow to be reasonably big without breaching those limits. And those tests are done at the point of investment. So an EIS investment can go into a company and then it can grow past those limits. A couple of other restrictions, age is one. So when it first raises EIS money, it needs to be less than 7 years old or 10 years old in the case of some cases. A sector is another. So there's certain excluded sectors. Farming and hotels are excluded, nursing homes, property development. Electricity generation is actually excluded as well. Whereas business relief doesn't have those exclusions. So, for example, electricity generation does qualify for business relief, and there's a lot of renewables investments can be made that qualifies for business relief.
They're all really interesting points, and I think the restrictions and the criteria around EIS are an important point. And a lot of people will be familiar with renewables having been qualifying in the past, as well as asset-backed focused EIS companies. Obviously, they're no longer the case, and that has been a fairly recent introduction to the legislation. How do you think that has impacted the level of risk that yourself and other fund managers have had to take on?
Yes, well, certainly for EIS, you're absolutely right. Renewables used to qualify. And so between 2010 and 2016, there was a lot of EIS money went into renewables. And after that point, I think the government said that renewables no longer needed the benefit of EIS. They were attracting a lot of institutional money. So it was removed as a qualifying sector. In terms of the patient capital review in 2017, assessed really sort of what was the purpose of EIS. And the purpose is to channel money into companies that would struggle to raise funds without that assistance. And so really all EIS funds and all EIS investments are into growth companies. And they are by nature high risk. There are ways, of course, of mitigating that risk. For example, investing into a portfolio of companies, looking at different stages of investment. So, for example, you know, there's obviously startup companies, but there are companies that have already, you know, perhaps moved on and developed their product, which still qualify for EIS, and so are further along in their growth trajectory. But yes, it is a high risk area.
Thank you. And clearly, advisors and clients are not experts in selecting EIS qualifying businesses that might be suitable for investment. So what is it that you would look for in potential investee companies?
So let me start with management, because management is such a key area of a growth company. We like experienced management teams that have done this before, who built and sold a business, or who have relevant experience. Sometimes you have a young founding team who may not have done it before. That's where we can really help as well. We can put in place an experienced chairman. We can help them. And part of the investment process from a company like Guinness is not only providing money, but it's providing access to all sorts of resource for the management team to help them grow. So management is key, though, in delivering on a growth business model. But then, of course, you know, looking at the business plan itself, and all businesses show optimistic forecasts in what they expect to happen over the following years. And part of our job is to unpick that a little bit and put more realistic projections in place to understand what can be achieved. And that helps us with valuation as well. Market is important. So what market the company is operating in? Is there a growing end market? Where is their competitive position within the landscape? And that also, you know, looking at competition helps us analyze when investing into a company, what the exit's going to look like, who might be a natural buyer for this, those are all sorts of things that we look at when assessing a company.
Okay, perfect. So it's good to know that decisions can be delegated to somebody such as yourself, who's got the experience and have been able to look at the important points when assessing a potential investment. One of the reasons why I started this question session with investments as opposed to tax is because clearly we don't want the tax tail to wag the investment dog. But tax reliefs are attractive, and they are one of the reasons why clients become interested in this area. You've given us a brief overview of the tax reliefs available, and how important do you think they are in driving capital into EIS and business property relief funds?
I think undoubtedly, and you're absolutely right. Looking at an investment has to stand up on its own two feet without the tax reliefs. That's very clear. I think what the EIS tax reliefs do is provide additional protection for investors. And it's probably worth reminding you what those are, because there's three on the way in. There's the EIS income tax relief of 30% when the investment's made. There's the business reliefs, which is the inheritance tax exemption once it's been held for 2 years. there's the capital gains deferral. But then there's obviously, there's the two others that are available on exit. One is loss relief. So if the investment does badly, the loss can be offset against income tax or capital gains tax. And the other is the capital gains tax-free exit. So any gains are free of capital gains tax. And so they actually provide a protection and a buffer for investors, limiting, I suppose, the maximum loss that could be made in the situation of a complete write-off, for example.
So it's fair to say there is an asymmetric risk-reward payoff in the sense that losses are capped, but gains are potentially unlimited.
Yes, that is part of the protections that are put in place to encourage people to invest in these smaller companies. As I say, you know, these are growth companies at a relatively early stage of their development. So the EIS tax reliefs help provide those protections for investors looking at and investing in this space.
Okay, great. And if we were to focus on business relief for a moment, there may be a different type of client that would be interested in isolating business relief as opposed to gaining all of the income tax relief and CGT deferral from an EIS. So is it true that you can isolate business relief? And if so, what are the implications for investment risk?
So first of all, yes, it is absolutely true to can isolate business relief because business relief is available to a much wider group of assets than EIS. So some of those sector restrictions or size restrictions aren't there. And so, for example, you know, our business relief offering, the Guinness Sustainable Infrastructure Service, focuses on renewable energy assets and particularly solar installations. And we like solar because it's a fairly uncomplicated technology. So this is an example of somewhere where you have a trade that qualifies for business relief, has reasonably predictable cash flows over a long period of time, and therefore is suitable for targeting a steady return and qualifies for business relief.
And then in terms of business owners who may be already shareholders of a company which qualifies for business relief, there are certain planning opportunities where you no longer have to wait for the two-year qualification period. Is that something that you see? And if so, could you give us an example of how that would work in practice?
Yeah, so absolutely. I guess business relief covers private companies. And therefore, I suppose an interesting case study is an investment we've seen whereby an investor sold a family business and invested some of the proceeds into the Guinness Sustainable Infrastructure Service. That investment, the shares that were held through that investment, qualified for business relief as soon as they were bought. So there was no additional two-year holding period. And that's because the legislation allows for what's called reinvestment relief. And providing qualifying assets are held for 2 years out of a five-year period, they will qualify immediately. They don't need to wait another 2 years. And we've also seen that through investors who have invested into an EIS investment, held that for several years, received the EIS income tax relief, and on exit have invested the proceeds into a business relief service, and therefore again have qualified immediately on investing because they have held EIS assets that also qualify for business relief.
That's a really interesting point. And so that would contrast quite nicely with something like gifting into a trust or gifting directly to beneficiaries, whereby the gifter would have to live and have to survive for a 7-year period. What you're saying there is with business property relief, if they're already holding qualifying assets, they would only need to invest. And the next day, effectively, they would gain 100% inheritance tax relief and still retain control over the investment. The control aspect, again, is another interesting point. And would you say that is one of the core reasons why a person would invest into BR rather than making a gift outright?
Absolutely. And there's, you know, plenty of I think that is a big attraction of investing into a business relief scheme such as the Guinness Sustainable Infrastructure. Because of that access, you know, the money can be accessed quickly, and there is the ability, if it's needed, that control and flexibility is there. And so I think that is definitely an attraction. Obviously, with gifting, the asset is out of the individual's control.
Yes, and clearly it's down to the advisor, such as ourselves, to determine suitability for a product like this, as we understand they are deemed high risk by the regulator. But from your perspective, what do you think clients and advisors need to consider before making investments into EIS and BR? And how should they select providers? Because, of course, there are many.
Indeed. I think the risk is key. And clients need to ensure they're comfortable with the risk. You know, starting with EIS, it channels investors into small, high-risk companies. Some of those may go bust. An investor needs to be comfortable with that level of risk. I suppose another point, particularly with EIS, is the investment horizon. So the minimum EIS holding period is 3 years. Many EIS investments can take considerably longer to exit. So investors need to be happy to have their money tied up for a period of time. For business relief, those considerations are less pronounced because it's available on a much wider asset class. But investors do need to consider risk and liquidity as well. Do they have access to the money when they need it? And for both EIS and business relief, and indeed any investment, consider who's managing the investment. You know, for fund managers, look at the strength of the business, the track record and reputation. Fees are an important point to take a close look at. And I'd say information flow to investors, what the investor communication looks like.
And so from a client's perspective, what sort of fees should they anticipate having to pay? And are they taken directly from them or are they payable by the investee companies?
I think one of the bugbears of advisors is that often fund managers do this differently. So it's hard to compare apples with apples. So I can speak for the way we operate our Guinness EIS, which is what we do is when there's a subscription to the service, we invest 100% of that subscription, and then we charge our fees, which is a 2% annual fee, to the investee companies. And that ensures that investors get tax relief on their whole subscription. As I say, everyone does it slightly differently. With our AIM EIS, we can't charge fees to the investee companies. So we actually invest 100% of the subscription, and we only charge the fees on exit. And for business relief, we run the same model. So invest 100% and charge the fees to the investee companies.
Perfect. Thank you. Yes, I think from the research that I've done, it seems that the fee range tends to be fairly tight from all of the providers. The fees are just ascribed in a different way, whether that's to the investee companies or to the clients themselves. Clearly, tax reliefs are an attraction. Investment returns are the other side of that, and one would hope to get both attractive tax reliefs as well as considerable investment returns. There is a degree of risk reward, and the level of risk taken hopefully should correlate with the reward received, but that doesn't always work out. What sort of returns do you think they should expect, both from an EIS and also from a business relief solution?
For the Guinness EIS, we indicate a portfolio return of in excess of £1.25 per pound invested over a 4 to 5 year period. That excludes any tax reliefs. And actually, when we make an investment, we target at least a 2x return per company. But on a blended basis and a portfolio return, we manage expectations by guiding a little lower. On the Guinness Sustainable Infrastructure, which is our business relief offering, we target 5% per annum after all fees.
Thank you to Shane for your insight, and thank you to Chris. We hope this helped answer some of your questions on the topic. And if you'd like to discuss your own succession planning, then please reach out to us through the Strabane's Hall website. I'm Gillian Wilson, Director of Marketing and Communications at Strabane's Hall. And if you'd like to join us on our next podcast, please get in touch directly. Thank you.